Hi guys, welcome to the latest Trinity Times podcast. My name is James Forrest of the Celtic blog, and I'm hosting tonight with my usual colleagues Eric Knott from Reed Celtic and Joe McHugh from Video Sales. We're joined tonight by Peter Kelly, who had quite a weekend speaking outside Celtic Park, ripping Tom English a new one, and generally representing the Celtic collective very, very well indeed. But before we get on to tonight's business, I'm going to have a wee personal indulgence. Tam McManus, you are a clown, mate, an absolute clown. You must be one of the only people in Scotland who hasn't actually paid attention to what's on the referees' jerseys. So here's what I suggest. You borrow somebody's specs, you have a look at the sponsor on there, and you get yourself down to Specsavers and get yourself a pair fast. Because if you don't think that Bojan Majovski is offside, you need your fucking eyes checked. Sorry about that, guys. So, yeah, it was a bit of a weekend. Wilfried Nancy's finally got his first points on the board. There's probably never been a Celtic manager more in need of a win than this guy was. It could have been very bad yesterday had he not got the result. He's been under more pressure than any manager I have seen in Scottish football for a long time, and I'm including Russell Martin in that. Because the pressure this guy's under was far more intense than what Russell Martin had to put up with. And losing his first four games was fairly disastrous, especially as one of them was a cup final. But some signs of life at the weekend. Not just a good result, but a good performance as well. Maybe I've got that round the wrong way. A good performance produced a good result. That's how he would see it. That's how he would put it. But I was really impressed yesterday with how they played. The number of chances he created, the number of shots on target. We had a good striker. We win that game by about five or six. It's the same problem, but it's the same issue that's haunted us all season long. The board of directors has asset stripped the front line. And until we get that fixed, we're not going to win games as frequently as we should, and we're not going to win them as well as we should. I'll pass on to Eric first for his view on it. But I'll answer our first post. I'm still concerned, mate, about Wilfried Nancy. I'm still concerned that the system doesn't quite fit the personnel at the moment, and I'm quite concerned that we're going to lose a lot of goals. That problem will be rectified somewhat if we're scoring enough of them. But we're owned up too easily. And their ball through the middle yesterday just caught us completely cold. And it ended up with Big Austin having to try and race back. I still think, by the way, Kasper Schmeichel should make the save. I don't think that he had covered himself in glory. I don't think he has recently. And he should probably sit out a couple of games. But, you know, if we've got a player at the other end of the pitch who can bang a ball in the net, it's not even an issue. Eric, first, what do you think?
Well, the first thing I'd say is it was a badly needed result, 100% there. We needed that win. Wilfried Nancy needed that win. And it keeps us somewhat in the race. But as I said in the article I put up earlier today, I don't see it as a turning point yet. Okay, so for me, the turning point is going to be when we travel to Almondvale and we beat Livingston. Then we go on to Fir Park and we beat Motherwell. And then we beat the Ibrox side at home. If we beat the Ibrox side at home comprehensively, I believe then that's a turning point. We will have had a serious turning point. But there were a lot of positives to take from yesterday. Look, when you take 70-plus goals out of a team, yesterday is a perfect example of what happens. Had we, and everybody's saying it in the comments there, had we had a clinical striker that game, we would have been out of sight, absolutely out of sight by halftime in that game. So we can look at it from that perspective, and we can say that Wilfried Nancy has been dealt a shit hand in that regard, that he just hasn't had a striker. Did we get the rub of the green? We did, to a degree. The sending off definitely gave us an advantage. But the thing that stood out to me most of all was, and we've highlighted this in the previous podcasts, was in the four fixtures we lost prior to yesterday, the heads went down as soon as we conceded a goal. We seemed to just wilt when we conceded. Same thing happened to Tannadice last Wednesday night. We just wilted after the equaliser was scored, and then when the winner scored, as we said in the podcast, it was utter chaos thereafter. That didn't happen yesterday. So, and when you put that into perspective and you think about it, it probably could have had more of a psychological effect actually conceding a goal to 10 men than it would conceding to 11. You know, the fact that we had been all over them for the whole game, and then all of a sudden they just got one break. That guy Cartonson was gifted. I mean, Dyson Maeda did an excellent tackle, and then he suddenly turned an excellent tackle into a Christmas present. And that guy Cartonson just took off, and he probed forward, one time pass, and they had the equaliser. Yes, definitely, Michael should have done better. But the positives that I will take from the game was the reaction. We haven't got that reaction in previous games when we've conceded a goal. And I think the fact that, you know, as I said, psychologically, that blow of competing against some men should, based on the previous goal, hit us pretty hard. It had the opposite effect. And I felt, yeah, definitely, we won't say it's a turning point, but we have to see a result at Avondale, and we have to see a result at Forbach before we can, you know, and then, as I said, on to Celtic Park. And again, you know, we have to see a comprehensive victory there for us to actually be satisfied that what Wilfried Nancy is trying to get across to the players is actually, you know, sinking in. It seems that yesterday something sank in, and the players are starting to believe somewhat in what his idea is. So yes, it's definitely positive. It's a step in the right direction, but there's a long, long way to go yet before, you know, we have full trust in the new manager. And I mean, if we go to Livingston and we lose or draw there, that puts the pressure on him straight away again. But a victory works wonders. And when you're under pressure like we were, and we got that victory under our belt now, victories breed confidence. And ultimately it will, you know, breed confidence into the players, and they will be wanting to go into the next game and get another result. So I'm happy. Part of me probably wanted the nightmare to end. I wasn't sure what way I wanted it to end yesterday, but I'll say for now it's on pause, and we'll see what happens in the next few games. But the one thing I would say outside of our result yesterday, a couple of years ago I said when Dimitar Mitov was playing for St. Johnstone that he is definitely a keeper that we should be looking to sign. I mean, I was laughed at that time. And if you look at the performance that keeper put in yesterday, that was phenomenal. I don't know, you know, I mean, there were some saves he pulled off there yesterday that you would not expect any keeper to pull off. His reactions were unreal. And I think when you look, Kasper Schmeichel's age, he hasn't got long left. I don't think it'd be a bad show to bring a player like Mitov to Celtic and, you know, put him in competing with Viljami Sinisalo for the number one spot, because he has shown time and time again, especially against us, very similar to somebody passed that comment to me yesterday about Benjamin Sigrist. You know, he used to always turn it on against us as well when he played for Dundee United. We brought him in, he never got his chance. But that was an outstanding performance yesterday from Dimitar Mitov. He is, without doubt, one of the top keepers in the Scottish Premiership at the moment. And only for him and our poor finishing on some occasions, and the post and the crossbar, you know, that could have been a cricket score. Absolutely could have been a cricket score. But I'm sure Wilfried Nancy must have been impressed by his performance. So maybe that will sow the seed in his head. That's just me. That's my opinion. I think he's a very good keeper, and I think he'd be a good show for us. But
I'm assuming that it's Jack Butland who's finishing in front of him, right?
I don't know about that. When you consider his second goal, the second goal he conceded against Hearts yesterday from that tight angle. Oh, my
God.
Get
to that goalie, don't worry.
Look, I said, like I said, lads, I have tentative anticipation now of the next game. That's the way I put it. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, tentatively. Yesterday was a step in the right direction. It's not a turning point, and it won't be until, as I said, we've played the next three games and won them. Then that'll be a turning point.
Yeah. Joe, over here.
Beating Aberdeen 3-1, it's a hell of a low benchmark if that's progress and that's folk thinking things are improving, things are getting better or not. Celtic beat Aberdeen 2-0 in a canter at Pádraig earlier this season. So Aberdeen played in Prague on Thursday night, got the runaround in that match, turned up at Celtic Park, got the runaround down to 10 men. That was their own stupidity. That was their own mistakes. I don't see it. Sending everyone forward, having midfielders all pouring forward and everyone pushing forward, two attacking fullbacks, you're bound to have chances, you're bound to have loads of pressure. The minute Aberdeen looked to get forward, there was no resistance at all. I mean, the goal they scored was typical. One ball behind and the guy's running through one and one. So it's a kamikaze style of football. It might be exciting and it's a win rather than getting beat with D United. But if folk are seeing positives in that, where we stand with Wilfred Nancy, we'll see where we stand at the end of January. We've got quite a tough run of fixtures coming up. I don't think there's too many Celtic. It's possible, it's more possible now than it was on Thursday, that they can win the next two matches, which is Livingston away and Motherwell away. But the fact we're even debating, discussing, thinking about that, this time last year, Celtic had lost one match. That was away to Borussia Dortmund. They'd 9 points in the Champions League. Just now, they've got 7 points in the Europa League. Wilfred Nancy looked at that, accepted it. He wants to come in. He wants to work with Paul Tisdale's signings. He's going to work with Paul Tisdale's signings in January. And we've got a lot of tough fixtures in January. And towards the end of it, we've got Bologna away, Hearts away, and Utrecht at home. And the squad is nowhere near ready for that. I don't expect there's going to be three great signings announced on the 31st of December, as it was in 2021. So we'll be starting off December. We'll be starting off January with the same squad. And good luck to all the guys that think that was green shoots recovery and the tankers turning. But the performances stalled slightly. It was better yesterday. It was a 90-minute performance. They created chances. They missed chances. But That's what happens when you've got Johnny Kenny and Shin Yamada as your main strikers. So no encouragement from this miserable old cynic, but good luck to anyone else that's on board and thinks that the Wilfred Nancy bandwagon has started to roll, because I've got slightly higher standards. Beating Aberdeen 3-1 at home is nothing to get too excited about these days, so that's all from me.
Pierre, what were you, mate?
I think the win yesterday gives him to Livingston. I think he's on a one-game thing now. You know, I think it gets him to Livingston. If he beats Livingston, it gets him to Motherwell. If he beats Motherwell, it gets him to... Yeah, as long as he's not going the same trains I was trying to get yesterday, getting back for Parkhead. But it gets him to the game against AIM. It's just game by game being at this moment in time. I'm like Joe, I don't see any real improvements. You know, what can you say? He's there. I want him to win every game, but then I want Celtic to win it every game. So it gets him to the Livingston game and we take it for there. I'm just going game by game at this point in time.
Yep, I think everybody's the same. I'm not ready to break at the champagne yet. In terms of signs of improvement, I actually do think I see signs of improvement. And I liked the way he spoke yesterday after the game about how he wants to play. This playing the ball on the deck inside their penalty area, I think we had 200 or something touches or something inside their penalty box, which is nuts. It's mental. And I like the way he wants to play. I was tired, absolutely exhausted watching Rodgers. Teams crossing the ball into a penalty area where we've got one striker and no chance of winning the ball. So any system that plays the ball on the deck and tries to mix it up a bit in terms of speed and bringing players forward to drag their players out of position, that is good. I'm happy watching it. But
can I just say though, James, I think
he still doesn't have the players in the positions where he needs them.
One of the positives for yesterday is James Forrest got his goal, which means we're not sitting all season now, sort of wondering when he's going to get his goal. So let's get that out of the way.
I definitely. Any of you guys want to pick up on it?
No,
I'm good. I think I covered pretty much everything I wanted to. Like I said, it's green shoots. I mean, we had 31 chance, or was it 31 chances yesterday?
31
Something
chances.
Crazy like that. Yeah. So that's a positive, you know, but we need to see, obviously, 31 chances, 3 goals. The conversion rate's very poor. The conversion rate's poor because we don't have decent strikers.
Correct.
So hopefully we'll get 30-odd chances at Livingston, convert 3 of them, and I'd be happy. So we'll see. It's as Peter said. It's, you know, your Livingston's up next. Cross that bridge. Then we cross the bridge after that and the bridge after that.
So, obviously, we won. They're the only team that played yesterday. Hearts played yesterday, and they won. And they won well, other than conceding a late goal, which McInnes was freaking out about. They were very good yesterday. I watched the highlights last night. I caught some of the game inside Celtic Park on the screens, and they should have scored more. And whatever Tam McManus thinks, nobody got robbed. Nobody was hard done by. The Hearts got exactly what they deserved, and so did their opponents. But they've now beat us twice. They beat us home and away, and they beat the other mob across the city, the fourth place team in the league, home and away as well. I'm going to get stick for saying that the title race will not involve Hearts. But I'm still not convinced. Just as Joe, you're not convinced that Celtic beating Aberdeen 3-1 at home necessarily signals any sort of shift. I'm not convinced that them beating the fourth place team in the league at home represents any sort of momentum towards winning a title. They beat a bad team yesterday. That's the fact of it. When they came to Celtic Park, they beat a team whose manager had been in the building for like 36 hours. And I'm still not convinced that there's a title challenge there. But I'll tell you what, they've had a good couple of weeks. Since they dropped points, they've gave ourselves a shake and they've had some very big results. So Joe, what do you think? Are Hearts going to be there? Am I mad for thinking the bubble's burst?
You're mad for thinking the bubble's burst. Hearts are beaten. Teams in a crap league, an absolutely crap league. So we can slaughter the team that's fourth place. The Scottish team's in the UEFA Conference. They played 6 matches and they get 2 draws. There's two Scottish teams in the Europa League. One of them's played 6 matches and they've got 1 draw. The SPFL is absolute junk. And Derek McInnes has got a pretty functional, effective team. And it's not asking the earth to beat most of those teams most of the weeks. I think Hearts have got 1 defeat this season in the league. They're going to Hibs at the weekend. They're probably favourites to win that one. And that'll be them coming through a month that's seen them play 2 Glasgow teams as well as Hibs. And they'll be top of the league. We'll be able to tell when we go to Tynecastle towards the end of January. We'll know a hell of a lot more by then. The gap just now is 6 points. I wouldn't guess at what the gap's going to be. I don't think Celtic will be on top of the table at the end of January. Hearts are functional. They know what they're doing. Celtic don't know what they're doing. They're fumbling about. They seem to find something that worked yesterday. Who knows if that will work against Livingston. Motherwell will be very difficult opponents. Motherwell play decent football, get a decent manager, and they highlight and exploit teams' weaknesses. And Dundee United done that to us last week, so they've done it the week before. So there's tons and tons of work to be done at Celtic. Hearts just need to keep on doing what they're doing. They say beating Kilmarnock and Dundee United, Livingston, all these teams, Hearts are going to do that. They've been doing it most of this season. So it'd be fantastic if Hearts fall away, but I just don't see it. They're almost at the halfway point. They're setting the pace. And it's not as they've lasted longer than Aberdeen did last season. Yeah. And they've gone into the new, they've gone Christmas at top of the league. They'll be probably into the new year top of the league. And Celtic, three tough games. Every game's tough for Celtic, but Livingston, Motherwell, and the Glasgow Derby will be tough matches. That's followed, I think, by Dundee United at home, Falkirk away, and then Hearts away. They say the Hearts games after Bologna away, before Utrecht home. So, as I say, see where Celtic are standing at the end of January. I think if they're within a couple of points of Hearts, whether that's above or below, that'll be good going for Celtic. So, Hearts are not going to fall away as Aberdeen did last season. Aberdeen were already in free fall this time last year.
What about you, Peter?
Well, you've got to accept the fact that they're top of the league, and you know, they say the league doesn't lie, so you know, they're top of the league in merit. But they did go through that wee bit of before the Celtic game when they played us, Nancy's first game. They had us, was it four games or something? They didn't win any of them or something like that. So, and as you say, James, they go us at that really good time. You know, we had brand new manager in the door, all the pressure was on. It was a miserable day as well. It was freezing cold. It was chucking it down the rain. It was a horrible day. And that gave them a wee bit of confidence, I think. I didn't see any of their game at all yesterday. I saw a bit of the highlights last night. They're top of the league, 6 points. I think we've got the game in hand, so hopefully, you know, that takes it down to three. I think, as Joe says, you can't dismiss anything yet. But we'll see where we are sort of into the new year, go through January. By the time we get to them at Tynecastle, that'll tell us where both teams are, I would think, because hopefully by that time we maybe get some new players in, and the players themselves that are there, sort of, if Nancy's still there, they're a bit more used to his system and what he wants today. So I think it's just a wait and see, but they're top of the league, so you just accept that and you just win the games. You just concentrate on yourself and just win the games you've got, and then take it for there.
My view on the league table, you're right, the league table doesn't lie, but as I said, it does sometimes exaggerate. If you look at the state that we're in, the fact that we can go within 3 points in them if we win a game in hand, that tells you everything you need to know. We've had a dreadful, dreadful start to the season, and the club across the city had an even worse one. And for us still to be within touching distance of Hearts tells you that Hearts ain't that great either. The form is decent. The form is really decent. The set of pace, as you say, Joe, that Aberdeen hadn't managed, but they have not been brilliant. The form has not been brilliant. We've just been absolutely rank. We're having our worst first half of the season in a long, long time. And I think if we get it together on the second half of the season, it's a cakewalk, because I don't believe Hearts will sustain the form they've already done.
Can I make a quick point?
Go on, you sure shout anyway.
We did say a few weeks back, you know, that Hearts would have a blip. They had their blip. And now they've beaten us and they've beaten the Ibrox side. So by that, you know, by that measure, we should be thinking, have they had their blip and are they going to push on now? You know, so they beat us. They were lucky, I think. They beat the Ibrox side fairly convincingly yesterday. They probably will go to Easter Road and beat Hibs based on the way they're playing at the moment. But you are they going to have another blip, I suppose, is what I'm saying. You know, are they going to hit another run of draws, or, you know, will a loss put them on the back foot? I think that the only thing that will put them on the back foot is being subjected to a loss from us. I think if we get that psychological barrier out of the way, because they've beaten us twice this season so far. But if we go to their place next and we beat them, that's maybe where the momentum might swing. But the thing is that when that time comes around, we need to be in this title fight. So
I think what I would say is that if it comes down, if it's still as tight as it is to do coming down to sort of late March and April time, you know, getting towards pressure time, I think Celtic have the experience there, you know, with McGregor and Tierney's and the guys that have done it before, you know. So I think that's where Celtic would be, have the upper hand there, I think, on Hearts. And you can imagine, we all know what it's like in a title challenge. You're at home, you're playing a team you're expected to be at 75 minutes, it's nothing each. The crowd are on top of you, particularly at Tynecastle. And that's when the pressure gets to players. So I think if it, keep it tight, I think if we're in touch, if, you know, if it's tight come the sort of late March into April time, I'm pretty confident we'll win the league. But at this point in time, just, as I said earlier, just take a game at a time and see where we are.
That's kind of what the manager said yesterday as well. He's not interested in looking at the league table. He's not interested in worrying about what other teams do. Just concentrate on ourselves, game by game, and we'll see how the league changes as we go on. And do not rule out Hibs at the weekend. But do not rule out Hibs. I was speaking to some of my Hibby mates the other day, and I don't think they've ever been met up for a game against Hearts in years. So they want to be the ones that spoil the party. They want to be the ones that really burst the bubble. So don't rule them out. They've got a good chance. They need to improve their aim form, but their aim form's terrible. But I'll be watching that game with a great deal of interest, and I'll be cheering for the Hibbies, as probably will not come as a shock to anybody. Right, on to serious business then, as if the rest hasn't been serious enough. This has been some week, I think, for the collective. The news that Lowell was leaving at the end of the year would normally have been cause for celebration, and it would have been cause for... I'm not going to say I would have written a well done, congratulations and all the best sort of article, right? But I don't think I'd have been as pissed off as I was that he chooses to depart on not attacking supporters because he's finally getting some stick that, by the way, he's had coming for years. But it's not even so much the law statement falling on the Desmond statement. It's the whole atmosphere around, you know, the collective and the way it's been represented in the media and the way it's being represented by the club itself. Because there are stories in the newspapers that can only have come for the club. There are things getting pushed out there that the club is definitely briefing. And there is a seriously concerning aspect to some of it. The Police Scotland are getting involved far more than they need to and far more than they should. I mean, the whole bladed instrument scandal of the latter part of the week was absolutely shocking. And anybody who looks at that picture, and anybody who scrutinises it, knows there's nothing in that. There's nothing in that photograph that indicates a bladed instrument. I mean, I posted it on our social media. It's absolutely ridiculous. But it's not so much the media side of that troubles me. It's the fact that Police Scotland actually took that seriously and conducted an investigation into it. What, they were investigating what exactly? There's nothing there. So they're investigating nothing. And now the newspapers today, or some of them anyway online, are full of stories about one guy's Twitter feed and some comments he made about Lowell and burning Lowell's system. I mean, this is just a dickhead online. There's millions of them online. I mean, my God, if they had to look at political discourse online the last couple of years, it's 1,000 times worse. So they found one football supporter who had some really bad things to say about Peter Lowell. But you had to go looking for that to find it. And it's clear that somebody is looking, that whether it's the club or whether it's somebody else, people are out there snooping about looking for any negative they can shine on us. And the way the media has represented it, and I'm quoting Martin Lemieux on this, by the way, his comments today are utterly disgraceful. I'm writing about that tomorrow. But the way the media is representing it is as gross a distortion of reality as I've ever seen. And Peter, this is your area, mate, because you have absolutely kicked ass over the last 36 hours on this subject. And I know you're especially pissed off about some of the stuff that's been said about the AGM. and other things. I mean, you're probably in the same age group as my old man, right? And I've spoken to a bunch of guys there and who know this stuff, and you know, who are at the AGM or who are active in the collective, and they're all a similar age, right? And they're all pissed off at this characterization. They're all like, that's not us. We're about as far from that characterization as you can get. We're no young Neds. What the hell are you talking about? But this is the narrative that's getting pushed over and over again. I mean, I was on Twitter last night. I'm not going to say arguing with them, because I try not to argue with stupid people on Twitter. You can fall down that rabbit hole and no emerge for days. And the common thread was the collective are run by the Green Brigade and all this utter nonsense. And some of that's coming for the media, some of it's coming for the club, some of it's just coming for people who don't have a fucking clue what they're talking about and have no engaged with the collective at all and don't understand what is actually going on. But you had an interesting weekend on the subject, mate. So, Peter, talk us through it, mate, and tell us how you feel about it.
Cheers, James. Yeah, before I start on that, just to say thanks to Joe, because he put out a piece yesterday where he called me Kelly for the collective, which I thought was, it was a lot better than Price Prick, which I get called on Twitter at one point. And I think Ian McCall and Radio Scotland called me Putrid at one point. So Peter, the Putrid Price Prick, is something you can't see quickly. I think, you know, there's a couple of things here. There's the collective is run by the Green Brigade or Ultras or Jeanette Findlay, which is just utter nonsense. And I think we've been proving that time after time when we've had our demonstrations, when we've had things happening. You know, it just gets a bit tiring, and it's a sign that folk actually can't communicate with us, because that's an easy target. That's when I know that we were having an impact here, when all they've got against us is it's been run by the Green Brigade. Now, as I said yesterday, the Green Brigade are involved, the Ultras are involved, but there's a whole range of folk involved. You know, there's grannies, granders, mothers, fathers, us. You know, I look at the four of us and I can hardly see us as being sort of Green Brigade type members, you know. So it's... Exactly. So it's just an absolute nonsense. And when that's their line of attack, then I know we're having an impact here. And then you get to the sort of the stuff you got in the media, and particularly the stuff we go to on Saturday. Now, I sometimes don't listen to sports sound or whatever it's cried on a Saturday afternoon. I've got better things to be doing, like washing my hair. But I happen to be listening to it on Saturday, and it starts off the sort of usual, yes, the collective, Peter Lovell resigns, and it's all because the collective have been threatening him, and he's been getting all these abuse and violence thrown at him. I was like, no, that's utter nonsense. And then Michael Stewart comes on, and they always seem to think, yeah, the collective have got a point, but... So it's he starts, and then it goes to Chick Young, who gives us the old, oh, what a world we live in, and right, okay. And then we get, you know, Tom English claiming that Jeanette Findlay runs the collective. And that was at that point I thought, nah, this is nonsense. I'm not having this any longer. So as it happens, I've been following Kenny McIntyre, who presents it on Twitter. So I managed to get in touch with him and just says, you know, my name's Peter Kelly, I'm on the collective, and this is all nonsense. Now, to be fair, within about 2 minutes, he texted me back and says, would you mind coming on? So I was like, no. And it was like, right, my producer will be in touch. So the producer phones, and the next thing I know, I'm sort of live on air within the space of a couple of minutes. I wasn't preparing for it. I wasn't ready for it. But once I got on, I thought, nah, you're not getting away with this, Tom. This is just utter nonsense. And it's like, it's one of these things that the media have done for years, and we all know what it's like. They just say something, and after a while, that just becomes the fact. Mm. You know, and because there's never any alternative version given out. I think folk have basically heard what I said. And, of course, Tom pedalled so far backwards that he was nearly, you know, he's sort of, you know, apologising and... So it was just utter nonsense that Tom was coming out with. And I think eventually Kenny McIntyre felt a wee bit sorry for him, Because if you remember, he sort of says, right, we've had enough about Jeanette Finlay. And they moved on to something. And so I mean, the funny thing about Tom is that at one point, after sort of railing against the violence that the Celtic collectors were throwing out, he just then turned around and said, "Of course, we should be holding the board's feet to the fire," which I thought. And I wish I was sort of the my big regret is I wish I was quick enough to pick up on it when he said it, because obviously. I'd have sort of been pointing out this wee bit of hypocrisy here, Tom. And then, of course, he goes on about the AGM and, you know, the disruption. And again, that was all utter nonsense. So, I mean, folk heard that. Tom, I think, then came out and apologised for claiming Jeanette ran the collective. You know, what do you say? As somebody said earlier on, it's like shooting fish in a barrel, debating with Tom.
Really,
you know, so... It wasn't a planned thing. It wasn't. I didn't know it was going to get said. I didn't know it was going to happen. And in a way, that was probably best because it just came flooded out. But the funny thing, the other thing, you know, we went on about the AGM, and you know, oh, Jeanette storming up to the table and all this, you know, up to the board, which she did today. So I explained what's happening, and then he comes away with it. Well, there's two sides to each story, and I thought there's no Tom. There's no evidence. You know, you could see it on this video, you know, exactly what happened, you know. But Tom's not been the only one. You know, this whole, the AGM was absolutely, you know, it seems as if it was like the last days of Rome, this AGM that we sort of went through, you know, with the sort of chaos and the carnage it was going on with. Actually, it was no different to any other industry AGM. You know, businesses, when they have their AGM, if they've ever been to a financial institution's AGM, they'll see chaos and carnage, you know, or some of these big environmental group, you know, like ESO or BP or anything like that, you know, when the Just Stop Oil folk get involved. That's, you know, that's an AGM with carnage and disruption. That Celtic one could easily have finished as it started off, and it was because the board just didn't want to do it. And so, Tom was just, he was just opening his mouth and talking rubbish as he wants to do.
And then, of course, he gave a speech yesterday.
Yes, I know, and in front of the Celtic Park. So that was my big moment of fame at Celtic Park. Yeah, I mean, that was, again, that was something we discussed after the collective steering group held the meeting on Thursday after the Dundee United game, just to see about what we were planning doing for the game yesterday. And I think it was important that to tackle this narrative of being a Green Brigade front, that the other folk got up and made a speech. And, you know, I'm that person. I was quite happy to do that, just as I'm quite happy to come on here and say, look, this isn't a Green Brigade front. So, yeah, I mean, if anybody thought, as I said yesterday, if anybody went there hoping to see a Green Brigade member going up, like, you know, with the sort of flares and the pyros going off, they must have been awfully disappointed when they saw me with my bonnet on. I'm the collective as much as anybody, you know. So, you know, the speech seemed to go down quite well. I got a couple of rounds of applause. Again, the point I was trying to make yesterday is that this movement, this collective movement, it's about the fans, because we are the club, and without us, the club is nothing. And the club, you know, and if we stick together, then we can do anything here. We can do whatever we want today, because we are the club, and it's all roles. And I said something yesterday about how, you know, what sort of fans would we be if we don't hand over the club in a better state to the next generation than the one that we got, you know, the one that we got it from. You know, with the Scottish football's got a recent history of fans just standing back and watching a club go down, go under. We're no they folk, and we'll never be they folk. We weren't brought up to be they types, and certainly the folk that built the club never stood back and took that. So we come from a group and a fan base that have always fought for what we've got. You know, none of this ever came easy for any of us. It never came easy for our grandparents or our parents. And it doesn't come easy for us, but we're not going to just go away. And it's up to the club now. And I think it's about time we always, you know, we hear, so what's the end game for the collective? Well, I think it's about time the club came out and told us what's the end game for the club. You know, what do they hope to achieve? Where do they want to go with this? You know, what do they think that by cooperating with the police? And you're right, James, of course they have. There's things there that the police know and have been told that, that could only have came for the club. You know, what's their end game when sort of, you know, antagonising the fan base as they are doing? So, that's a wee bit of a rant there, but I think it's, you know, I think it's important. As I say, the two things I would like to get over is the collective isn't any one individual group or any one individual person. It's all of us, and I think that's important. And because it's all of us, all these fans together, this is our club, and we can change, but we need to stick together. And it really depresses me when I see some phantom Twitter accounts suddenly appear up that seem to take the bold thing. So,
followers just ranting and raving all day, every day, attacking anybody who supports the collective.
So that's basically it. I hope that made sense, because I just don't ask me to repeat it, because it was just a stream of thoughts there that came out.
No, excellent, mate, as ever. What about you, Eric? How's the view from Ireland and all this? I mean, some of this may encourage you, right? I mean,
well, it's not so much incredulity. I mean, obviously I'm following the whole narrative on the media, and that to me is just, I think I was kind of trying to think of a way to quantify it there earlier on, you know, and I to me, we have a conflict going on at the moment between the board and the fans. And for the last few weeks and months, it's been like a phony war, but the phony war has been totally on the board side. You know, because what's happening is they're firing shots all the time. And every so often, the collective is just coming back with howitzers and blowing them away, you know? And that's what, and the problem is now that, especially with that whole brandishing the knife story, that has just shot their credibility to shit. It's absolutely shot their credibility to shit. And it really, really makes them look phony. You know, the perception now is that, you see, the collective, as Peter alluded to earlier on, is built of people who believe in the movement, who believe that we can achieve something in this movement, right? And what has happened is, as we discussed the other night when we did our podcast on Peter Lawwell, that we entered into this wanting change. I don't think that we expected so quickly to knock one off his perch.
No.
You know, and as I said on Thursday night when we did our podcast, I said, I would have thought that he was the one who would dig his heels in the most. So the fact that we have managed to get him to pack it in, I think that's a huge achievement. And it's definitely, if anything, it's given us momentum. It's made us more, it's galvanized us more, and it's made us more determined to drive on and get the, you know, get the end goals that we want out of this. And it's like Peter said, that together we can achieve anything. And there's no two ways about it at the moment. We've got serious momentum going. We've got them on the back foot. They're coming out with these, I mean, it's obvious that they have people literally sitting on X trying to find something. And like, I mean, let's be honest here. X is an absolute fucking cesspit.
Oh,
I mean, it's like, so, I mean, if you want to trawl X for shit, you'll find the ultimate in shit on that particular platform. You don't have to look hard. It's actually, again, we go back to the shooting fish in a barrel, you know, analogy. That's what it is. You'll find somebody who will say something. And I mean, there are, like, the amount of morons that are on that platform, it's going to be very easy to find someone who's going to say something negative. Now, Peter Lawwell is a man who has run for 18 years as CEO of a massive business. He has to be thick-skinned to be in a business like that. And if you can't take criticism, and you can't hack somebody saying, you know, that, you know, what this guy said, I'm not going to repeat it because I'm not going to lower myself to that level. But at the same time, you're thick-skinned. That's it. Like, you have to be thick-skinned to be in a position like that. You are going to be subject to criticism. And the problem is, We've got to a point where these guys just can't take criticism. And this is the way they're lashing out. And to be quite honest, it's pathetic. It's absolutely pathetic. And it was just, it was absolutely epitomized how pathetic it was by that whole story with the knife. Because, like, even when you look at the picture, right? And you look how close, in such close proximity that a cop was. If somebody was brandishing a knife that close to a cop, what the heck do you think would happen? I mean, it's not even a plausible image. There is no cop standing there would allow somebody to brandish a knife at somebody in that situation. So it just, it's absolutely absurd. So for me, all they're doing is they're damaging their credibility with these constant attacks. And it's as Peter said, you know, what's the end game for Celtic? You can keep lashing out. You can keep firing back at us with all this bullshit, which is achieving absolutely nothing. It's getting you nowhere. It's fucking your credibility. So why don't you actually engage? Engage and tell us what's going to happen. And then people might actually take you seriously. But at the moment, nobody is taking the Celtic board seriously. They are a laughing stock. They're like, we used to joke for long enough, guys, as writers and bloggers about Statement FC. That mantle is gone from them, and it belongs wholly to us now. You know, because we are Statement FC now. And look, I never thought I'd see the day that that would happen. But no, I mean, I thought Peter's speech was excellent yesterday. Absolutely brilliant. Every subject, you know, you hit the nail on the head. You got the points across. And the thing about it was totally level-headed and totally on the money. You know, and that was, I could see that. Look, I could only see the video of it, Peter, because obviously I'm over here. But I could see and I could hear the reaction from the people around you. I don't know, how many people were there, Peter? I mean, was it a big, big crowd like?
To be honest, Eric, I had to take my specs off to read my speech, so I couldn't actually see. So I couldn't actually see far enough. But, certainly, I think they said there was 2,000 that went to the march. Was it 3,000 that went to the march a few weeks ago? Certainly at least that. Thanks for the comments, Eric. That was nice of you. But I think what I should say is obviously the collective, you know, we've never endorsed any abuse to be labelled at anybody, you know. And I think it's important to clear that up, and because otherwise somebody would just say, "Aye, but that guy never said anything about, you know, condemning it." So yeah, we know it's not about violence or abuse or threats. So, but I don't want to get bogged down in sort of apologising too many times, because that then you just, you know, there's no smoke without fire, as somebody would say, you know. So I think we'll leave it there. We don't condone any violence or threats.
Absolutely not. But no, look, like I said, I don't really feel I need to say much more from my perspective. It's time the board just quit the petty lashing out and engaged. And if they're incapable of that, this is just going to continue on and on and on until the next person goes. And as the campaign said, one down, more to go. And that's the way it's going to go.
Mr. McHugh, Peter's stalker, Peter's pal. What have you got to say about this, mate? Where do you stand?
First of all, well done, Peter. I put the laptop on Sunday morning, not much happening, and then on YouTube it came up from, I think it's Ronnie's Celtic fan content. He had a 10-minute clip, and that was manna from heaven. Infinite slapping Tom English about suits me and certainly suits Celtic fans. So that was the easiest story I've had this week. So well done in that. But the point of this is all caused by you rascals asking seven questions out on the 3rd of September with the backing of 100 Celtic fan groups. And Celtic have absolutely crumbled on the back of that. They won't answer any of those seven questions. They will demonise the Green Brigade. They will demonise Jeanette Finlay. They'll do anything but address the issues. And that was similar to that clown Tom English on Saturday on Sports Sound. So if any of the anybody watching tonight is still paying the BBC licence, you are paying Tom English's wages. So I don't have BBC in my home. It's a good few years since I last paid my £13 a month. But Tom English, I mean, what can you say about the guy? He was Craig White's last remaining cheerleader. Even James Traynor and the Daily Record had ditched him and Tom English was still on board. If there's anything to beat Celtic or Celtic fans up about, Tom English was on board. Shane Warren dies in Australia. Tom English is a pop at Celtic. That's the level of guy that you're dealing with. So it was brilliant. He tried to personalise things. And one of your best answers, one of your best quotes of the weekend, we're trying to chase you down a rabbit hole. Rabbit holes seem to be pretty popular these days. But what is your end game? What's your end game? You've got rid of St. Peter. What are you after now? And you just says, for Celtic to be the best they can be. Simple as that. It's not about getting rid of individuals. We know that Michael Nicholson is a waste of space. We know Chris, not mentioning Chris Mackay, smirking away and taking pictures and videos of Celtic fans while the team's getting beat 2-1 by Dundee United with 3 wins. So it was great stuff on Saturday, great stuff on Sunday. And when that balloon English was going on about violence and threats, you highlighted the nonsense of the scary finger that was on the media over the weekend. And English instantly dismissed it. Don't dare discuss that. And yet, STV covered it, The Record, The Sun, various others all covering it. And I used to work newspapers. There'd be an editor, there'd be a sub-editor, there'd be a picture editor. So God knows how that story got past a picture editor. I can see the story making it online, but to get it into print, putting 4 or 5 pictures together, highlighting that one picture, and the picture editor never noticed and says, wait a minute, guys, I don't think it's a blade. It might just be a finger. It sums it up about the Daily Record. So well done to the collective. Well done to Peter for getting on. I suspect you might not be getting another phone call back from Radio Scotland, but well done. You're as well having one shot at glory and making absolute most of it, than becoming one of the groovy guys that gets called up by the media for all matters Celtic. So I was well done. A few final points. So what one of the issues that English brought up was the behaviour at the AGM. I don't think English was at the AGM, and the behaviour at the AGM was nothing spectacular. I couldn't care less about this. I'm actually quite pleased by it, but last year at the 2024 AGM, I get far more heckling than Peter Lowe got at the AGM in 2025. Daring to ask a question about why Michael Nicholson sacked the son of the chairman from the head of recruitment and scouting. So all the old farts, I called them that last week, but at the 2024 AGM, the majority of folk there were old farts. Probably enjoy a certain Celtic website and get fed off that. So I get plenty of heckling for asking a few questions. As well as the demise of Matt Lowe, I asked about scouting. I asked about the useless B team. I asked Michael Nicholson to name the last player to come through from the academy to start a first team match. He didn't have a clue. Usual Michael Nicholson deflection, etc., etc. So there was nothing untoward at the AGM. Peter Lowell shouted, behave at supporters. Peter Lowell knew what Ross Desmond's statement was all about, and Peter Lowell wanted that to be a key part of the AGM. And after bringing about a 30-minute adjournment, he told you, it's finishing at 12:30, whether you like it or not. And a final point for this podcast on St. Peter. There's been lots of Celtic fans going about the great job he did in the business side, how he sorted out the finances, blah, blah, blah. Nonsense. In season 2014-2015, Celtic's turnover was £51 million. The following season, 2015-2016, when the top tier was closed for Europa League matches, the turnover was £52 million. So when St. Peter came in, season 2003-2004, Celtic had a turnover of £67 million. So while he was building his empire and seeing his income soar, he knocked £15 million off turnover in just about 10 years. All of the success, all the financial success, all the football success is down to Brendan Rodgers and Ange Postecoglou, no one else. So that's out there. Those figures are there. Anyone want to check it up, they're there to see. They're on the Celtic website. You can find it. So income in 2014, 15, 16 was down to about just over 50 million. And thanks to the success of guys like Brendan Rodgers, Ange Postecoglou, bringing developing players, allowing the board to sell them and deliver them Champions League football when you've not got a qualifier. That's the reason for Celtic success, not Peter Lowell.
And I think just you talking about the income there, Joe, and I think I would remind folk that a big chunk of that income comes through the fans.
All of
buying
it,
the stuff, all of it, you know, and therefore it would be a miss of me not to remind fans that, you know, not a penny more until we see where we go. So I'll throw that in. So thanks for that, Joe, for opening that door, and I'll just step in there and not a penny more. So absolutely.
Yeah, no, I've been on the subject several times. The Peter Lowell finance myth. If you strip out standard inflation, then the income drops by about 10 or 20 million. If you strip out football inflation, which is inflated transfer fees in the last 10, 15 years, and inflated TV money and prize money, the rise in profits is gone completely. Peter Lowell's great growth agenda owes everything to standard inflation and football inflation. There's nothing there. It's a myth. It's a complete myth. And you can dismantle the numbers and see for yourself. It's all there in black and white. And it's easy enough to prove disprove. There's been no growth at Celtic in his time at the club. None whatsoever. Except for standard growth that you get through standard inflation and the rising tide in football finance. He's not done anything substantial. As I keep on saying to people, there was a guy who was interviewed. One of those YouTube channels, one of the guys who goes around, visits all the football stadiums. He interviewed a guy from the States who told the story about how he became to be a Celtic supporter. He read something about the Glasgow Derby in some American sports magazine and thought, well, I have to follow one of the clubs. That sounds incredible. And because he was from an Irish background, he gravitated towards Celtic. That's the only reason he's a Celtic fan. Paulino, who writes for the blog and who I keep on hoping will come on this channel one day, she fell in love with Glasgow and Scotland, and Celtic came later. But Celtic did nothing to go and get these people. It's absolutely shocking how little outreach there is and how little attempt we make to interest people who might not be interested but could be invited into your little family, if you like. And they don't do any of it. We don't attempt to grow the business. There's no attempt to grow the support. There's no attempt to reach beyond the confines that these guys have locked us in. It's not just small-time thinking in terms of our ambition on the park. The ambition off the park is non-existent as well. It's horrific.
I think I've said to you before, James, about I think Celtic is a football club. One of the things we should be looking at, given our own background, given the club's background of being a club of immigrants, and it's going to, wherever people come from, wherever they're sitting, if they're asylum seekers, refugees, immigrants, we're their club, because that's where we are. And, you know, and that doesn't need to get political. That doesn't need, all we need to say is, look, if you've got a young boy who wants to follow a football club, we're there for them. And we should be going out, we should be getting strips, and we should be getting posters, and we should be really working hard to encourage, as you say, going out into these communities and just working hard for them. We don't need to get political about it. This is not about Gaza or anything else. This is just about trying to get people involved and giving people a wee bit of hope and a wee bit of happiness in their life, watching Celtic, hopefully winning games and trophies, you know. So I'd love to see Celtic do that, and I don't know how, you know, if I could get in charge, if I was in charge, that'd be one of the things I would be doing straight away.
A good start might be building the museum they're always banging on about, which they've dismissed because they don't think it's got any financial value, but I mean, is that really the only consideration? I mean, if you invite somebody to Celtic Park for the first time, and you take them through the museum, and you show them the club's history, and you tell them what Celtic is and where Celtic came from, that's another fan. That's not just somebody who will enjoy the experience. That's somebody who will tell somebody else, who will tell somebody else. One day they'll bring their kids and go through them and do the same journey. I mean, the club just has no imagination when it comes to this. It's run by bean counters and, in number boards, and they don't get the emotional connection. All these people that keep on banging on about Log's a Celtic fan and Nicholson's a Celtic fan, not the way we are. They don't get it the way we are. If they did, we wouldn't be in this state. The club wouldn't be reduced to this. What about you guys?
There's just one point I wanted to make. I did an article there a couple of days ago, you know, where I highlighted comments that Peter Lawwell made back in 2003 when we won the FIFA Fair Play Award, and how quick he was to jump on the bandwagon about us being the best fans in the world. And then again, when we won the award after our display in
2017.
And then when we won the award again in 2017 for our display, you know, to commemorate the team from 67, you know, and we won the FIFA award then for the world, you know, for the world's best fans. And Peter Lawwell jumped on the bandwagon yet again to say that we were the world's best fans, and they were very quick to lap up the plaudits for that, and it suited their agenda then. And then all of a sudden, we've gone from the world's best fans to violent criminals overnight. You know, we didn't just transition from that into violent criminals, you know, and that's the thing, that's what I was trying to highlight in that article. And as I said, when Peter Lawwell was leaving, you know, or he put up that that speech, if you want to call it a speech, on the Celtic website about he couldn't take it anymore and this kind of, like, he was very quick to jump on and take the plaudits for us being the best fans in the world. But yet when his parting shot was to say that essentially we're violent criminals and that we've made his life hell. He spent 18 years at the club. He took a lot of money out of Glasgow Celtic.
15 million.
As we discussed in the last podcast, in 2018, he was the highest paid CEO in the UK. He took 4% of our turnover as his wage. And this guy would never have been able to take that kind of money home if it wasn't for the fans who plough their money into Celtic. And to not thank us, to not say one single word of thanks to the best fans in the world, which he was very quick to say a few years ago, and to not say thank you to us for the life and the lifestyle that we have given him as fans of Celtic. You know, it leaves an awful lot to be desired. It leaves a very bad taste in the mouth. You know, that we are the people who plough our money into Glasgow Celtic. It's like people say to me, you're over in Ireland, and I say, look, guys, if I want to come over for a weekend, it costs me as much as it costs you guys a season ticket. So it's a serious investment for me to come over to watch games at Celtic. I plough my money in when I want to go and watch games. We all do it, no matter where we are. But the reason these guys earned the kind of money that they do, and Peter Lawwell earned the kind of money that he did, was simply down to the fan base and the money that we plough into this club. Celtic is the fans. And the turnover that Celtic has, you know, achieved, the record turnover that they achieved last season, that was totally driven by us. And that guy would have done well to thank us. His parting shot was absolutely criminal as far as I'm concerned, and he deserves nothing but disdain from the fan base now after the way he decided to part ways, as far as I'm concerned anyway.
Way back when the Ibrox fans were cheerleading guys like Dave King back in the door, I had a meeting with Lowell. In fact, it was before that. It would have been before that. But anyway, I had a meeting with Lowell, and he was talking about the impression I got that he was calling us ungrateful. He was talking about their fans are there, and he was talking about how much they swallow for their boards and how much they've had to put up with being told lies and everything else. And they never raise their voices and they never make a complaint. And then he's like, and look at us, we get stick for everything. We're always getting stick. We're always getting hassled for. We put a winning team on the park and it's no good enough for people. He's always been like that. Deep down, he's always been like that. He's never understood why he gets criticised for anything. He really is the ultimate example of a guy who believes his own bullshit. And he's believed it for a long time. And some of the media nonsense that was getting written about him in the last week, you know, talking about him being a colossus and a titan of the Scottish game and all that. I mean, please give me a fucking break. It's a bog standard CEO whose greatest achievement is that we didn't go bust. You know what I mean? They boast about it often enough. But he really does think he should have a statue in the car park. But Peter, it's not going to happen. Never going to happen. So, sorry. Going on a wee rant there.
As somebody said there, we got the disco lights, though. Fair play. We got the disco lights.
That's what Brendan Rodgers got instead of John McGinn that year.
Yep. So, £3 million sure, quid's worth of disco lights.
I'm sure it was worth it. And this year, this summer, he got new dugouts where he doesn't even sit in the dugout. I mean, he should have been grateful for that instead of, oh, he's complaining and oh, he's bitching and oh, he's moaning. We should be grateful that we've got nice new dugouts and disco lights. Anyway.
Yeah, who needs decent players when you've got a dugout like that?
We are over the hour, guys. So thank you, all of you. And thank you, everybody who's watching, who's liked, who's subscribed. And if you are watching and you haven't liked and subscribed, why the hell not? Get on with it and spread the word and tell everybody about us and how good this podcast is. last thing before we go, Livingston. Peter first, are we going to beat Livingston at the weekend? Are we going to all be sitting here on Monday again talking about Celtic back in crisis and, oh my God, the manager's got to go?
Right, I'm going to be really confident and really positive here and say, I don't know. I genuinely don't. There were some good, without repeating everything we've said, there was some good stuff yesterday. There was some good stuff actually up at Tannadice as well, but ultimately, we can't defend. And you know what they're got, They're just got to fire big long balls right up the middle of the park. And that horrible pitch,
boys
bouncing everywhere. Yeah, folks let's say we will. A Christmas miracle. We will.
Sounds reasonably confident. What Christmas miracle is what we're looking for. But yeah, what do you think?
I think my concern is that, you see, we that pitch, number one, thankfully this is the last season of those pitches, and 2026 was supposed to be the last year of those pitches being allowed. So from next season, everybody's going to have to play in grass, which is a good thing. All right, but
we'll celebrate Peter Law's departure until he actually goes, and I won't celebrate plastic pitches until they're gone.
My concern is that Livingston will do their usual camp 11 inside the box. We'll attack all fucking night long, and we'll have no striker to actually finish. And they'll, as Peter said, they'll get one ball over the top, which we've discovered we're fairly susceptible to at the moment, and score against us. But I'm going to go along the same lines as Peter, and I'm going to say we're going to witness a Christmas miracle, and we'll come away just scraping a 1-0 win. That's what I'm going to say.
What about you, Joe?
I'll stick with my prediction for virtually every game for the last 2 months or so. Who knows? Absolutely anything can happen. We could win 4-0. We could lose 2-0. So there's no form. There's no predictions. Anyone putting a bet on it's off their nut. So keep your money in your pocket. Not another penny for the bookies, and certainly not another penny for the Celtic Superstore.
Now, the only tipster in this country worse than me right now is Hugh Keevans. So whatever I say, no use to you whatsoever. I thought Aberdeen would beat us, and here we are talking about Nancy Ball. I don't know. I genuinely don't know. I don't know. I can't shake the sneaking suspicion that we'll beat them. I can't shake the sneaking suspicion that we may even beat them comfortably and score a few goals.
Take that.
We'll all take that.
Definitely. So, guys, thank you again for joining us tonight. All you viewers and listeners and internet bampots. It's been a bit of an interesting week, and another one is in front of us. Life at Celtic at the moment, never a dull moment. So, thanks again, guys.
Definitely. Cheers. And thanks a million, Peter. Great contribution.
No worries. Have a good Christmas to you and your families as well. Catch up with you soon.
Well done again on the weekend. Thank you.
Thank you. Right. Cheers.
See you next time, guys.